Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. We're joined, we're going to pay tribute to Skeletons, Morels, NRBQ drummer, and about 68 other bands. Bobby Lloyd Hicks, who passed away last week at the age of 69 in Springfield, Missouri. On the phone, we have Eric Amble, a previous guest to our show. How you doing, Eric?
Real good, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing okay. And we've got Donnie Thompson, guitarist.
Here.
How you doing, Donnie?
I'm doing fine.
We can't find Joe. Joe was going to call in, the keyboardist Joe Terry, so maybe he'll call in a little bit. But
it's kind of late for Joe.
Yeah, he's got that coffee shop, but yeah.
He's up about 4:30 every morning.
Yeah, right, yeah. So for listeners, for both of you guys, tell us about how you first met Bobby Lloyd and how you got involved with music with him. Eric, I think maybe with you, it was you first saw the Morels at the Peppermint Lounge in New York.
Well, I think we should start with Donnie, because yeah. Donnie's got the history.
Go ahead, Donnie.
Okay, I will. I first saw Lloyd with the old Granny's Bathwater Band. I know your listeners out there are going, what? That's a name? But actually, it was a great name.
Yeah.
But I first saw Lloyd playing with them, and I knew that he was the best drummer I'd ever seen at that point. And he just played with such authority and conviction. And just, it's like every stroke of his stick meant something. It wasn't fancy. He just laid into the groove, and I had never heard anybody like that before. So I was duly impressed.
And how long ago was that?
Oh man, that was probably 1972.
And then when did you join with him? When did you first start playing with him?
Well, you know, I first met Lloyd at. I was working a music store here in Springfield, and he would come in. And Lloyd, to me, was almost kind of a scary character. He just had this sort of attitude kind of thing, and he was, I don't know, I wouldn't say sullen, but he was just had this kind of attitude, and he was just kind of mysterious to me. But he would come into the store, and we got to talking one time, and we started talking about the Beach Boys. Well, anybody that knows Lloyd knows the Beach Boys are his all-time favorite band. And Brian Wilson is his all-time favorite musical person. So it's like, you know, meeting somebody you think is maybe is real mean, but they like cats. Well, hey, they can't be all bad. We got to talk about the Beach Boys. And, oh, this guy likes the Beach Boys. So I do, too. And I was missing a couple of... You know, there's a couple of records I don't have, you know. And I came back to work the next day, and I looked in the office there, and there's those two records. Lloyd came back the next day, and before I even got to work, brought the two records I mentioned not having. He loaned them to me. And anyway, and I said, well, this is a good man right here.
Yeah.
So that's where I... That's where
hey, Donnie... Donnie, what?
Hi, Sco. How you doing?
Good. Was that Hoover's?
No, that was the Rock Shop. There was a store that opened called the Rock Shop, and I went in there and brazenly asked for a job, and by golly, a guy named John Godd who ran it gave me a job.
Fantastic.
He had no musical prejudice. I mean, his ears were very, very open.
Oh, extremely open. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He knew a lot more than I did at that time. I was green as goose poop then, you know. And, you know, I learned a lot. Well, I met Lou Whitney around the same time, you know. So it's almost like my education kind of started then. And I learned about all the things I had missed. Because mostly I just kind of knew whatever my friends were listening to and what I heard on the radio. And that was just about it. I was just a suburban kid growing up in Springfield, Missouri. So meeting those two guys was really important for me.
Scott Kempner told us once, Eric, that the Skeletons / Morels, America's last greatest, last great secret. When did you see them first? And I mean, that's why I want to pay due tribute to all this, because it's just such great music that, that comes out of there, and it's kind of been.
Well, for me, the first time I saw them was, I believe, it was a Valentine's Day in New York City at the Peppermint Lounge.
That's it. You're right. And, correct.
And it may have been, I'm not, it's probably 1982. But
correct.
And that was the Morels. And
early 83, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a distinction. You know, Ron Gremp played drums in the Morels, mm-hmm. and Lloyd played drums in the Skeletons. And that was the, that was what the delineation of the two bands. But I'd seen Lloyd and met Lloyd, you know, with all our, you know, the Del Lords. We gave Lou Whitney a tape when we met him at, and the guys at the Peppermint Lounge. And he said, well, if you come to Springfield, Missouri, I'll record you, you know. And we did. And that, for me, that, you know, it made a lifetime association with music in Springfield. And through my times there, I got to meet a lot of great people and play with great people. And you know, Lloyd included. I didn't play with Lloyd as much as a lot of the guys, but I saw him play with a lot of these different bands. And I did get to play with Lloyd a few times that were really exciting. And you know, Lloyd, this is a great bunch of guys to be around. And Lloyd was a great guy to be around. And the thing, I think to me, beyond the music, that everyone loved Lloyd so much, they just were loyal to him and never gave up on him and stuck with him. You know, when times were tough, you know, like Lloyd loved everybody and everybody loved Lloyd, you know.
I mean, it's such a it's music from the trenches. It's music from the heart. It's such a commitment. I mean, Lloyd was so proud to say that. I mean, I think it was up to 70. He passed away at the age 69, right? 70 bands at least he played in. Is that, I mean, that's amazing. That's just, he said since high school, but I know bands change their names and stuff like that, but I mean, it's just, and you know what, I talked to Donnie this afternoon, but you know what, I was looking at some stuff on a Facebook page, and I don't know if you want to talk about this, but I want to talk about the healing power of music, and when Lloyd was, he had lung problems, and he was sick, and I saw these things with Donnie, you, and talk about you and Joe Terry, this is like within the last 6 weeks, where you were over at Lloyd's house, and you were playing. I mean, it just, it brought tears to my eyes. It's just, the commitment and the feeling of music is just overpowering to me. Can you talk about that?
Well, we were going, it was almost every week, not quite every week, but we'd put together different lineups of people. And we go out and play with Lloyd because he couldn't work.
Right.
But he's a musician and he needs to play. So we would go out and with different little lineups, I'd try to find, so we weren't always playing the same stuff, you know, and try to keep it a variety going. And we'd just go out to his house and just sit down in the living room and just play music. And I think it gave him a huge lift because otherwise he was just kind of stuck at home at that point. And anyway, we all I enjoyed it. It was fun for everybody, you know. It gave Lloyd a lift, and it gave us all a lift.
And the other thing, I mean, in all the projects I'm doing and that I have done on Springfield, Lloyd, and you talk about this, Lloyd was such a vessel for history and knowledge. And again, even up in the last couple of weeks, he'd email me back with an idea or a lead and stuff. He, you know, he did the Music Monday series there in Springfield. I mean, he really, really got the history of the important history of Springfield music.
Yeah, he was around a lot longer than I was. So he was a treasure trove of history and information.
Eric, did he talk to you?
Well, there's all these bands, you know, like he played a lot of bands came through and used the Morels and the Skeletons as their band, and you know, that's how you know, Lloyd got his association with Dave Alvin and Scott Kempner and Sid Straw and stuff. But there's other really amazing things that he did musically. You know, I've been working for the past few years with Jimbo Mathus, and I spoke to Jimbo Mathus this morning, and we were talking about he had recorded, he produced King Clarence. Clarence's duo with Clarence and Lloyd at his studio in Como, Mississippi. And this morning, when I was talking to Jimbo Mathus down in New Orleans, he said that that was one of maybe the 10 best records he ever worked on.
Wow.
And he, how he loved how Lloyd did this wild, you know, blues duo with Clarence and Clarence and Lloyd. And you know, you got to give Lou credit though, because I think Lou came up with the name for Clarence's sound, which he called Clarence the King of the Floodplain Blues.
That he is. That he is.
Am I getting that right? Yeah. Am I getting that right, Donnie?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay.
Louisms, I use them every day.
Again, for listeners, got to know about Wayne Carson and all that. Wayne Carson, you know, wrote The Letter and what Neon Rainbow and co-wrote Always on My Mind. And a lot of that publishing money came to Springfield. And that's what's another thing that's so important is how Lou and Lloyd kind of learned in Wayne's studio and at Cy Simon's place. You want to talk about that, Donnie? And then I want to talk about the session, the religious session they did.
Well, I mean, Lloyd played with Wayne back in the before he'd really hit big as a songwriter. He used to go out and play with Wayne, played gigs. So he goes way back that far.
This is what Bobby told me a couple years ago about the studio after Wayne kind of let it go. And he said, and Lloyd said, this is where Donnie and I first started recording ensemble sessions. And Bobby goes, there'd always be a prayer. This is Wayne's old studio. There'd always be a prayer before the session. These family gospel units would come in self-contained, and usually the daughter or the mother played piano. And one of my favorites was this troupe that came in and brought Grandpa on a board. The guy couldn't walk, and they had padding on the board, and they carried him in and laid him on the studio floor, and they were doing the Johnny Cash song. The two sons and the nephews, whatever, they raised him at the mic, and they go, Daddy sang bass, Mama sang tenor. They laid him back down, and they'd sing the verse again and bring him back up. Daddy sang bass, Mama sang tenor. And they laid him back down. And Donnie, you would go, yeah, that's good. And then Bobby goes, it was good. If you're playing along, trying to not to laugh at the mic, and Bobby goes, my favorite was when Bobby Threadgill, the other drummer, we finished one of those songs, and he goes, we nailed that one to the cross. But, I mean, I have this great imagination of just what that scene was like, and that's why you guys are so precious to be able to share that history, you know.
No, it's the that rub between the sacred and the profane, you know, as they always say. Lloyd, let's talk about Lloyd. Lloyd grew up in a very strict, and I think you can say religious, upbringing. But he loved rock and roll.
Yeah.
And the primitive musics, or what a lot of people call the devil's music, you know. And I think he had difficulty reconciling that sometimes, you know. But that's kind of what made him the way he was.
Yeah. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and get a little bit more with you guys. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal.
I tried talking to get through to you. I tried calling to get my message through. I tried every way that I know, and my heart is beating Morse code. My smoke signal went up over town.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. We're here with friends of Bobby Lloyd Hicks, Eric Amble, and guitarist Donnie Thompson. Donnie, did you find that song, Morse Code?
Lloyd did.
Lloyd found.
Where did that version come from?
That's off one of the Skeletons bootlegs I brought in.
Oh, there you go.
How'd Lloyd find it?
I think it was just on one of those import rockabilly collections that we used to find out on the road. There's been a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just probably did it the last time we played with him. He always loved doing that song. I never got tired of that song.
Didn't Lloyd find the Ronnie Self song, the Waiting for My Gin to Hit Me?
Yeah, he recorded the demo with Ronnie and his kids. That's become somewhat of a cult collector's item, I guess. That original demo is strange.
And you know, you guys' version is so awesome. You know, your band, the Skeletons, you know, probably the best unison singing band left in the world, you know, like...
We kind of had to do that.
Well, there are so many records that we love from the 60s and the 70s that had the doubled vocal.
Sure.
When you would go and see you guys play and they had that big unison vocal sound, it just was really commanding.
There's some critics that didn't like that, though.
Yeah, well.
What would they complain about? How could they not like that?
I shouldn't say critics, record labels.
Yeah, okay.
They didn't like the gang singing. None of us were really great world-class singers, but neither were Jan and Dean or the Strangelovs or bands like that that I really love, you know. And I thought, well, we can kind of do the same thing.
How'd you pick vocal? I mean, like, how'd you...
studio sound live.
Say what now?
Well,
I didn't hear that.
You were doing the studio sound, but you were doing it live, you know?
Well, you know, if it sounds good in the studio, it would sound good live, I would think. I like the idea
that a lot of people can't pull it off.
Harmonies don't have to be... They can be... Unison is a harmony, you know, in a sense.
Right.
But, right. So, yeah, it was just... Why not?
You guys are such a good time. I mean, Lou always talked about humor, and Lloyd always talked about fun. He liked talking about how the first two albums he bought were Sandy Nelson's Let There Be Drums and Jose Jimenez's Submarine.
I bought the Jose Jimenez, and he bought the Sandy Nelson.
Really, really.
Actually, the first one I bought was Andy Griffith's What It Was Football. Jose Jimenez was second. Then I got into music.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, we got a minute left. Actually, it's funny you brought that up, Eric. We're going to close out with Gin. So before we go, Donnie, you want to set up Gin, how Lloyd found it?
That's good. This writer of the song, Ronnie Self, Lloyd was in the studio one time. Joe Higgins, the guy that owned the studio, had left for some reason. Ronnie Self comes in with his three or four kids. He says, set up a mic. I want to do this song. So Ronnie went into the studio. They sat down on the floor, kind of in a circle. Lloyd set up a mic, went into the control room, started the tape going. And they just started this thing. It was acoustic guitar, and they were beating on something, maybe just on the floor. I can't remember. But so it's really weird that he was in there singing the song about drinking with his kids. I mean, these were just kids 7, 8 years old. You know,
and it became
it's a very haunting demo.
Yeah. Well, thanks you guys. Thanks for joining us tonight on WGN. Thanks Eric Amble and Donnie Thompson, and
thanks
to Bobby Lloyd Hicks. Awesome.
You betcha.
All right, take care. Thanks for listening tonight.
Thank you all. Okay. Thank you. Bye bye.
Sitting on the floor, Indian style, waiting for my gin. Mama saying prayers for her bad child, waiting for my gin to hit me. Well, hit